Signs of the Southland, Monday, April 1st, 2024. Happy April Fool's Day, everyone. As an introduction, what was your favorite April Fool's joke that you saw today?
I mean, I saw that a post on the aviation interwebs about how Boeing was inventing the 797, and it was just them changing the three in 737 to a nine on everything. I thought that was pretty funny, but that's pretty specific to my interests. So.
That's pretty good. Tech last night put up that the letters got taken down from Tech Tower because I think they fell off or something like that. And so now it's
No,
just
no, no,
called,
no, no.
or is
They were intentionally taken off
that's
because
right, that's
light
right.
pollution concerns.
Light pollution. Yeah, so now it's just Tower. Today it's just known as Tower.
Interesting.
Steal
Interesting.
the T and also the EEC and H. Yeah. Yes.
You know, there's an order to it, right? Like you're supposed to
Yeah. Oh,
eventually
yeah.
take one off of all four sides.
And then you go for the E's, and you go for the C's, and you go for the H's. Yeah,
They're not going
that's
to
why
be.
they gave me that little medal when I graduated. It's because I memorized all that stuff. That was a thing. Don't you
Nerd.
remember?
This a
I
rec
think
club
Cade
thing?
was handing those. No, so
Yeah,
it's
it
for our listeners who don't who are still in school and can still do this. It was run by, I think, student media, but then Rec Club took it over, wherein if you got enough of like the classic Georgia Tech traditions, they give you a little medal. So me being a bit of a tryhard, I was like, sure, I got some time. I'll make note of it. Almost ran out of time because then a pandemic hit. Whoops. Luckily, graduating with my master's, I counted the stuff I did as an undergrad. But basically, if you can submit pictures for having done the traditions keepers for, it's like all the core ones and then some of the this, that, and the other thing, they'll give you a medal. So if you're still in school, go check it out.
I definitely did not know this existed. So,
Recclub.org
Hold on.
slash traditions
Hold on,
keepers, by
hold
the
on,
way.
hold on. It's on my wall. We're doing this live. Oh,
Podcasting is a
wait, it's
visual
a
medium, of
visual
course.
medium. People aren't going to be able to see it. It's buzz gold and black and white, and it says
That
tradition
sure that
keeper.
this is a medal. This is a medal he has
Yeah,
in
it
his
is
right
a
hand.
medal. Jake, are you
It
sure you actually want this medal considering its color scheme?
it's black and yellow and white. Yeah, no,
It's buzz
I'm
colored.
rethinking
It's
all my
buzz
life
colored.
decisions,
It's buzz
but
colored.
you know, it'd be real spooky if they made a buzz costume that was in the actual tech gold and navy. I feel like that would be just real uncanny.
Oh, we don't
Real
want that.
uncanny.
Why
We don't want
do you
that.
gotta do this? Why do you gotta do this? Stop, stop. We're moving on. We're moving on. A couple of introductory bits of news before we get fully started. Construction has officially started on the new athletics facility, Athletics HQ, on the corner of Techwood and Bobby Dodd Way, named the, what is it, the Thomas A. Fanning Student Performance Center, if I remember correctly from the press
Seems right.
release. So I think as Jack posted on Twitter, the entirety of the front corner, or the north, what is that? The northeast corner of Bobby Dodd Stadium is entirely under construction. So keep that in mind if you are around those parts of campus. Speaking of football, and Bobby Dodd Stadium, the spring game, the football spring game, has a couple of additional accoutrement, if you will, added to its pre-game festivities on the 13th of April. There'll be a yard sale, the Gasparilla Bowl, Gasparilla. At some point, they'll tell me how to pronounce it. Gasparilla Bowl trophy will be on display, and there will be a nice Techwood market as well. Any other notes on the spring game, gentlemen, before we move on?
Clarify, they mean by yard sale, they mean just surplus merch that they have on
Yeah.
hand. And then the Techwood Market, think of it as the block party just sized down and on Techwood Drive instead of on North Ave.
Yeah, I'll note that those yard sales wind up being pretty interesting. I went to the track and field one before a
Oh, I
volleyball
remember
scrimmage
this.
years ago, and I got like a nice pair of sweatpants for like 5, 10 bucks, pair of socks for like $1. I mean, it's not the It was still Russell Athletic, and I think we were like 3 years into the Adidas era, but it says GT on it. This golden navy. You could do worse.
Cheap slash free gear is still cheap slash free gear, you know?
Yes.
It's more
Exactly.
comfortable because you paid less for
That's a great attitude. I love that.
This probably
Let's
goes
move
without
on.
saying, but the gates next to Cali Plaza and Cali Plaza are like totally not usable for this game, just because that is
Yeah.
the active construction site takes up basically everything from where the football area that building starts to the sidewalk to the staircase by the Bobby Dodd statue. So yeah, it's fun to look at, I guess. They took out the Heisman statue today. The plaques are off the building now. So they're moving things. Yeah, I don't know if they'll move Bobby Dodd statue, but they definitely had to move the Heisman statue. So that is,
I imagine
as
they'll
long as
move
he
it
comes back.
because, you know.
I assume he will, but we just didn't want him to get crushed by something.
I think that Bobby Dodd is in that spot for a reason, and this is me just completely off the wall going for this, but I'm pretty sure there was some sort of Letterman effort in terms of like sponsoring the plaza and the stairs there where the band warms up. So I think that's probably static, but I'm interested to see just how the exact footprint changes because and this is us getting a little off the rails here, but we did notice that, you know, it's a pretty short building today, the Edge building, if you look at it from the stadium side. And you know how the new corner will shake out will be interesting because it's short and tight, and you know it looks like it's a lot more airy in the rendering. So at
Yeah.
least for me, I'm interested to see how that shakes out.
They also lose a lot of square footage because the entrance is elevated by like half a story. So you have all these ADA accessible ramps you have to build to get in there. And so I think the renderings have this the entrance on the actual ground this time. So they'll have to be able to take up more sidewalk space will be able to be used. And like if they won't have to waste as much space on accessibility.
They call the current style brutalism for a reason. I mean,
Yeah.
it's not, it's like a
It's a
fortress.
concrete
So,
brick. Let's be clear. It's
yes, bad.
it's a
It's bad.
slab of concrete, but it's our slab of
Yeah,
concrete. So
that's the
that's what matters.
spirit.
Let's talk about some goings on in our slab of bricks at O'Keefe Gymnasium. Volleyball started its spring scrimmage schedule with three home fixtures alongside the Big South Invitational, as we discussed last week, going on at GWCC downtown. Your three fixtures for this weekend: a 3-1 win versus Tennessee, a 2-1 win versus Virginia, and another 2-1 win versus Auburn. Jack, you were on site for a couple of these. What did you see?
I was there for the Tennessee game. That was the only one I saw, but that seemed to be the main one because they did play that full. They played that full five, and they were going to plan to play a best of five. Of note, Tennessee was the ninth ranked team in the final rankings last year. And we were 14th, so that was not a bad match at all. They were good. They had some great middle blocking, had some good hitting, and we basically played the starters per normal for the first three sets. Liv Mogensen did not play. I'm guessing just no need to actually like put any stress on her considering that he is probably not all the way gone because knee injuries do take time to heal. But beyond that, Luana Emiliano filled in it. She took this main was it center role and she was great. They did the normal 6-2 formation rotation stuff they do with Suarez and Mendez and all that stuff. And then a couple of the freshmen got to come in. Logan Wiley, who we've mentioned, she played a little bit in that fourth. The fourth set was just basically all subs. So it was our starters 1-2-1, and then the subs won against their subs 1-0. But it was tight. Every set went. I think only the second set went to 25-17. Everything else was in the 20s for both teams. So it was tight. It was good volleyball, and there was a lot of players from that youth tournament that were at that match in the morning match. Like it was a 10 a.m. match. It was very, very, like really, really full for a 10 a.m. exhibition match. So they did well. I was good to see. The coaches were in their normal yelling at the refs, couldn't believe calls and stuff like that per normal because even these practice matches mean a lot to them. Bianca Bertolino, I think did zero things wrong. Like her serve was perfect. She could get any shots she wanted from the outside. It was insane. She has gotten better in the last couple months.
Good. I mean, one thing that I am heartened to hear is just the turnout. I mean, if you sustain a successful program for long enough, people associate with you with that success, right? It's not a flash in the pan. It's Georgia Tech and Tennessee. You know, those are, I guess, names you can recruit to. And if you're a, you know, kid trying to notice, you think you got a chance. I see no reason for them not to be in the building. So that's great to hear. One thing that I did notice, I was in the airport on Friday flying up for some Easter holidays with family. I noticed people were already leaving the tournament, so I thought that was a little odd because I thought that went into the weekend. But
It's just such a,
completely unrelated to Georgia Tech, but
yeah.
I assume it's so big that like people are coming and going all the
Yeah,
time.
it's like that. Yeah, not everyone's scheduled. I don't think everyone's leaving en masse on Thursday, Sunday, or Saturday, or whatever the final day of that is. So,
Good
makes sense.
stuff. The only other note that I had from this is that there was also an open practice, I think the day before the scrimmages, and that
Thursday,
was
yeah. Thursday had
looked.
there were people there. I didn't go, but their photos made it seem like there was at least some folks there. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, for a practice, it seemed for an open practice, it seemed pretty well attended.
I'll
So.
take. I mean, that tournament was also happening then too. So it's. I mean, if there was going to be a, if a team couldn't go on Saturday, they could at least go on that Thursday and watch them play too. Even that set those Saturday games, like some faces I recognize from just going to so many games, like PR, like season ticket holders were going to these games, these matches as well. So the crowd that they have is extremely committed, as Jake was noting.
Good deal. Next spring scrimmage fixture is this weekend in Athens. So stay tuned for some updates from there. But for now, let's flip over to golf, who was at the Goodwin in the Bay Area this past weekend. They finished fifth at 6 over par on the weekend. The winner, we don't have to talk about them, but they were the only team under par. At 1 under, so this was a very, very difficult course on the week. Some other conference schools that were in the mix, Stanford and Clemson. So get your really good competition in there. Tennessee was also in the mix there as well. I looked at the field and it was very weirdly like, you have your Stanford, your Tennessee, your Clemson, and then a bunch of West Coast schools because it's on the West Coast, and then also App State. And Howard,
Gotta get
I
tournaments
don't
in
know.
somehow, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know how the sausage gets made on some of these tournaments, but this is how how these fields get put together. In terms of individual scores, Christo Lambrecht, Bartley Forrester tied for 11th, both at even. Carson Kim at tied for 30. Third at 3 over, Hiroshi tied for 68th at 8 over, and Cale Fontenot tied for 80th at 9 over, but his score did not count towards the team score. The final event of the golf regular season calendar is Calusa Cup. That is next weekend in Naples, Florida. Gentlemen, anything on golf before we keep trucking along?
Bartley's final round was a 66. That's his best of the season, so at least of the spring portion so far. So good to see some hot golf with ACC's 2 weeks away. That's ACC's effectively as NCAA proto NCAAs in terms of the level of talent we're going to be facing. So got to get hot at the right time, as we're seeing with both NC State basketball teams right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the place to be, but I guess we're kind of past our basketball era, so maybe we skip on by that.
The other thing that I'll notice here is that if we're taking a look, or at least we're taking a more future-facing look on this team, they've been consistently the top five, six in the results, at least this spring so far. I think at this point last year, they were probably like that first through third in a lot of their tournaments. So it's like a slightly lower gear. I don't necessarily think it's predictive
But like
of
barely lower
anything.
too, like barely lower. Like
Yeah.
it's like it's in that range of where they could, like last year could have been at this exact same spot. They could have been plus a few strokes better, a few strokes worse. Like it's just right in that middle tier of just like they're obviously in that still in that elite tier. And then just you miss a few putts here and there, and then well there you go. Now you're fifth at a few strokes under where you want it to be, but.
Yeah, and I think, well, to our benefit, I think Lambrecht has sort of settled in and he's
Oh,
gotten a little
yeah.
bit more consistent as the season has dragged on. So hopefully that bodes well as we head into the back stretch of the slate and towards the postseason. So we'll keep an eye on that. Let's talk about softball next. The first game of the week was at Kennesaw State, and that was postponed due to weather. Weather this past week was nasty at times.
Yeah.
But let's and that really did not end for the entirety of the week as Tech went up to Syracuse. A 1-2 series loss in one game that had a frozen field situation
Basically,
also.
yeah.
Really weird stuff. I'll get the results out to you, and then and Jack, we can walk through the performance here. Game one, a 5-1 victory for Tech. Game two, a 6-5 close loss for Tech, and then game three, a 7-1 victory for Syracuse. A blowout loss there. So, Jack, what do you got for me here? We saw that article last week where we talked about how Tech was getting really good at hitting, and not a particularly good performance at the plate this week in comparison.
No, not at all. I mean, there's some pitching spots where we could have been helped as well. I mean, Sophia Voiles was fantastic. It's basically if Sophia is pitching, we have a much better shot compared to our other pitchers that were going to get a win down. Norton had, I mean, there's so many games someone's going to have the off night, the off game eventually. It seemed like Kenzie Norton had hers during this series as well. And then it plummeted to sub-freezing temperatures and the stuff gets weird in games like that when you're dealing with just weirdness in that regard. I mean, they're still
Oof.
making solid contact, but it's not great. I'll note Mikayla Caulfield, she pitched when she finished the in game two, she pitched 4 1/3 innings scoreless, which reactor which and then she pitched some in game three. That got her to 10.1 innings pitched without allowing an earned run, which was an inning worse than what Nelman's career started with. So she started really good for a game and a half, and then finally Syracuse was the ones that got her. Yeah, I don't know. This doesn't seem like the worst series ever, but also one we should have won. Like we should have won
I,
two. We should have won two of these.
Jack, you've opened a horrible door for me to be a pedant. It was only sub-zero from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. on Friday. As a
Oh my
northerner,
God.
I have to make sure we set the record straight on that. But building off of the commentary there, I just feel like this is a series we had to have. Syracuse, they're solid. They're a top 100 team. They're not bad, and it's in their building in bad weather, cold weather, weather that southern teams usually get dinged for having to go into. Like it happens in all the outdoor sports of going up north. And I was listening to D1 baseball a couple of weeks ago, and they're saying the same thing about Miami visiting Notre Dame. It just happens, but that's also the sport, right? You got to take care of business, and I feel like this is a take care of business series. It really would have been nice to get scratch another run or two across in that second game. I think it's unreasonable to ask for to expect sweeps, but Syracuse has played a decent schedule, a harder one than Georgia Tech, to be frank. But I do think Tech grades out a little bit higher, and like I said, it's one of those where, man, you just kind of wish you had the second game. Not again, not the worst thing in the world, not dire, but it does push us out of my tournament field at least. So that's kind of where I set my mood at.
A couple of notes from me on that. This is Tech's third straight ACC series loss. So they have not won an ACC series since that NC State series to open the slate. On Syracuse specifically, Jake, do you remember a couple years ago when Syracuse softball and women's basketball basically imploded in back-to-back months
Didn't
with
volleyball
massive
also
scandals?
implode in that year too? Or was it because Syracuse
More
has
or less,
imploded their volleyball team in the last few years here too?
the scandal that caused it, I don't remember the exact details of the scandal itself, and we'll set that part aside for now. But the roster exploded, or the roster imploded, for lack of a better term. And now you sort of look at that in, or you look at that from now, and you're saying, okay, well, in women's basketball, Syracuse has obviously turned into a top 25 caliber team, right? Volleyball, I think they're still having trouble, so can't really put too much stock in that. But now Tech, who has, at least you can put some thought towards, okay, Tech has a talent advantage in this series against a team that did have to retool its entire roster cover to cover a couple of years ago. And was not necessarily good when they had to do that. I don't know. I don't feel good about this. Like that, there's it's foreboding
I
to
was
me.
looking at the standings. Those were Syracuse's first home games of the season. They hadn't played once at home, so I would not discount a thank God we're
Very
home now.
motivated.
Yeah, like they finally get to play on their actual stadium and all the comforts that that brings. So I would not discount that at all. Just some other just conference-based stats. Our 91 conference runs are second only to Virginia Tech's 96. They also have just only 27 more runs than us on the season. So like
Ninety.
we're still scoring a
That
bunch.
was wins, you said? 91?
91 runs scored
Run
in
scored.
conference play.
Okay.
Conference
Whew.
play.
Went right over my head.
That said, we are if granted this, and looking back, we played Pitt and NC State. They both only have one conference win so far. So those are the ones you absolutely had to have. Syracuse's third is we played the bottom three teams in the conference right now and beat we won the series in two of those cases. And then Louisville's coming up. That's their fourth, their bottom. They're the fourth worst right now by our standings. So like you gotta win. Like we have to keep winning these games. And so yeah, losing these series is no longer excusable. Pending,
And
I know the
we'll.
various Louisville things we have around this particular group.
I was going to say Pitt's one win is against Louisville. Dare I say that's a series that if you're Georgia Tech, you're looking at it as something they need to win, and if you're Louisville, you're looking at it as something you need to win. And Tech, of course, does have the scheduled break from conference play this week, but they head to Auburn to play. Gents, this is a daunting slate, certainly more daunting than the Syracuse team they just played, and certainly more daunting than the Louisville one that comes up next. The collection of teams, for the record, to just put it out there, is Troy. They get Wednesday. That'll be actually at home, not yet in Auburn. But then they get Auburn in Auburn on Friday, Louisiana Tech in Auburn on Saturday, and then a doubleheader later game against Auburn later on Saturday. These teams are quite good. Louisiana Tech is one of the best mid-majors in the sport. I believe they're currently leading the CUSA, if not in standing, certainly in
Yeah,
metrics. I see them as a top 40 team by quite a decent margin that would put them in the field as an at-large. Auburn, of course, most SEC teams are pretty good, but playing a top 25 team on their home turf is pretty solid. And then even Troy rates out pretty similar to Georgia Tech at its top 100 team. So,
These are the games where they got to prove themselves. Like, this is where you got to take the learnings from Clearwater and put it to work. Like get that, figure out whatever pitching things you like, hit the same way. If you hit the same way, we're fine in terms of like you can't say that was bad, but like you gotta figure out ways to not allow 10 runs a game. Not don't rely on scoring nine, but just make sure you don't allow like seven or eight every time.
can I borrow a concept that Kurt Hoyt brought over to talk about women's basketball?
Yeah.
And I think it's super telling. This team's in search of its marquee win. Would you
Yeah.
agree?
Yeah,
Like,
I think that's
and
fair.
Auburn's a great chance to get one, but like they've been treading water against teams they rate very similarly against. That's fine, but you got to get one or two of these and stack up some more of these wins if you want to be in the tournament picture, I
Yeah.
feel like.
Yeah, because it's the only ones you have, the only chance you have left are this and Virginia Tech. Like, that's it.
And Virginia Tech's a little spooky, so
And that's it. They are
it's a
spooky.
chance in name only,
Spooky and
Jack.
on the road, so yeah. This is yeah. You have to do it now. I'm just looking at our RPI, not that it's the gospel or anything like that, but Louisiana Tech's 45th and Auburn's 21st. So,
I'll add to that, Tech is 54th in RPI. And looking at our friends' softball stat lines rankings, they're 15th in offensive rank, 160th. Still pretty low in defensive rank, and have slid down to 61st in overall rank. So they are still 1-8 in Q1 games. So that kind of tells you the story. Like Jake, you were saying, it's like they're able to either 5-2 in Q2 and 8-2 in Q3. They're able to beat teams right around their skill level that are even with them. But once you get one little ding above, it kind of goes to hell.
And I do want to just kind of close or round out. We've talked, at least alluded to, Virginia Tech, Louisville, and this tournament situation this weekend. The last team Tech has to close out ACC play is Virginia. The end of the season is coming up remarkably soon. And getting Virginia at Tech is a good thing. They've acquitted themselves well this year, so it's certainly a spooky slate. You know, three or even four out of the next 4 weekends. All these teams have quite a bit to play for, whether you're Louisiana Tech, Auburn, Louisville, Virginia Tech, or Virginia. And we can, you know, talk about midweeks when we get there. But this is, we're staring into the teeth of the schedule, and that's where I think a lot's gonna shake out at the, you know, in terms of moving the needle from the current 23 and 14 to, you know, how that translates into ACC tournament selection, sure, but also, or I mean, seeding, but also, you know, NCAA tournament selection too.
Seems good to me. Let's talk about those future fixtures. You mentioned them, but I just want to make sure it gets on everyone's radar. Wednesday, Tech will play Troy at home. Friday will be Auburn at Auburn. Saturday will be Louisiana Tech at Auburn. And then Saturday, the matinee at Auburn will also be at Auburn. Let's flip over to baseball. And gentlemen, it's not looking too good
We might have
in
some big problems.
general.
We might have
It's
some
not
big
looking
problems here.
too good in general. Tech swept by Boston College this weekend, and it did not look pretty at any juncture. Boston, Jake, check me on this, but Boston College's baseball team has not been, I'm going to try to pick my words carefully. The caliber of talent that Boston College, in terms of baseball, brings in on a regular basis is not necessarily immediately comparable to Tech's, would you say?
From a purely recruiting standpoint, I think the answer is yes. However, this is despite coach turnover year over year. Last year's Boston College team was a pretty darn good team. They went 37 and 20, and then wound up in a somewhat spooky regional in Tuscaloosa, and played their way through to the regional final where they lost to the home team. But yeah, I mean, recruiting wise, sure, but this is a team that's gotten more out of less, and kind of the same way we talked about, you know, Northern schools just a couple minutes ago with Syracuse. Like, you know, Boston College is a team that develops players pretty darn well, and I think that's one that's built themselves a program that really this year has kind of kept things humming along as well as you can reasonably expect, despite, you know, losing their coach to Penn State.
I think this is kind of where we get into the discussion of Tech's problems are at this stage of the season, they're about halfway through the slate, are effectively the same as what we mentioned to start the year, right? They still struggle with pitching, that they're hitting okay, but at the rate that they're giving runs up to opponents, it's unsustainable to have to rely on clutch hitting or hitting period to bail you out. And it sort of begs the question what the next steps are, right?
I do want to couch this real quick with we're talking like this, not just in a hey, like the Boston College series did not go as expected. Georgia Tech played Boston College, which is by all metrics a reasonable bubble or potential regional team. North Carolina, which is probably a top 10 team, maybe top five by most ways you slice it or most ways you analyze it, but one that's shown flashes against NC State, another top 20, top 25 caliber talent wise, you know, type team. I do want to couch it with that. Like, this is a team that has shown flashes, but
We still cannot pitch to save our freaking lives. Our
yeah.
main
And that's the end all be all, right? Like that is.
Our main names from last year, Terry Busey, he's only appeared in six games. He's got a 15.75 ERA right now. Ben Kingston at 4.61. That's fine. Carson Bowers at 2.49. He's pitched well in his innings so far. And then Logan McGuire's done okay. Aiden Vinatieri's done well. It's basically outside of Ballard and Vinatieri, you're just praying. It's just that bad. Like we can hit fine. Drew Burr's still eighth in the country in homers. He's not gonna hit four homers a game all the time, and he very much hasn't ever since that game as well. When he got himself to 10 or 11 or whatever that was. But after the Georgia series, save the NC State series, we should have gotten run ruled in the third game of this series at home. and we couldn't get the job done in extras because we just didn't have the arms to get through the 10th inning. And there are still games where we just can't hit for anything. We just barely beat Georgia State a couple weeks ago. Like, that took some absolute magic from Burris and Ellis. So, when you try the same thing over and over again, do you think that calls for a mix-up in a way, maybe?
I'll add this to the mix because Jake, I know you have some other thoughts on that too. This is Tech's sixth consecutive loss. They are now 3-6 in ACC play after starting out 3-0. North Carolina is back on top of the Coastal at 10-2, and they've won 9 straight. So, and I'm pretty sure that includes
That includes our
the
games.
Tech series. So.
I feel like we swing somewhat all over the map. There's times when I'm the optimist and Jack's the optimist at other times, and that's what makes for good banter. And I think the most telling thing to me is that it seems like we've all kind of arrived in a very similar spot here. We've noted that Tech plays in a tough neighborhood, right? But they have a slate of brand new facilities. They've been recruiting very well. And at the end of the day, how many pitching coaches can one go through? I think that's where my thought keeps going back to. It seems like we've tried this before. Like, okay, there were that 2019 team, we talk about them all the time. They were great. They were wonderful. Then you bring in Danny Burrell. Okay, this team's going to get to the next level. And it never got there. And granted, it's been half a season, but at the same time, like,
That's I mean, half the games is
it's half, yeah, half the games are over.
that's a real sample size now. That's you can predict off of that for the most part.
And I think the telling thing is Terry Busey was good last year. Like
He's
it
amazing.
seems like there's like it seems like the variance is just so high with year over year turnover, and how much of that is new pitching coach versus old pitching coach, how much of that is managing. It just seems like the and I don't know. Credit to our fan base, but I don't think this is a group of people that's reset any expectations at all for what this program could be, because darn straight, they're one of the best programs in the history of the ACC up there in terms of like
Right.
conference titles and maybe not necessarily Omaha appearances, which again is a whole ball of wax, but the expectations are high because the tradition of winning, at least, since the 80s, has been pretty high. Like, we don't have to get into like 60s or 50s wandering the wilderness type thing, but it's also a different game than it was back then. And now
Yeah.
I'm derailing my own point. So.
Well, your point about the Omaha thing is salient because that is the next step, right? Like that has been the next step the entire time, is to consistently be in super regional matchups and consistently be in that conversation for Omaha. And that's where Georgia Tech has almost rightfully earned its reputation at the national, the tournament level, as perennial underachievers, right? Like there is a constant, I mean, when is the last time that they made it to a super regional period? Not even advanced, but just made it, right? That the last time they
Oh
made it to
six, when they
Omaha,
went to
more or
Omaha.
less. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're talking about almost 20 years now,
Yeah.
right? Of
On the verge.
the
Yeah.
same old result. And it's not just, okay, they're making the tournament every year, they're lockstep and like they're shoo-ins, they're always going to be in that mix, and oh, they just can't, like randomness is getting them out of the hump. But in the last 10 years, right, in the Jake and Akshay era of being at Georgia Tech, they missed the tournament half of those times. Like
Yeah, it
the
never felt
level
like
of
it's never felt like the arrows truly pointed upward in a real way that you could be like, okay, you can put real faith in that. It's a flat little bit of burst spurts of up and then noticeable drop down, pick it up a little bit flat. It's not pointing on the regular up in any way. I'm thinking about when Pastner got canned. It seemed like eventually there was just Jay Badges and the current athletic leadership, I think, saw like there is not a very prominent, like, he may be a good coach. He's a solid dude, of course, still lives in Atlanta. As Ken told us, awesome guy, but just like clearly that program was not going to get to a spot it needs to be under him. And I don't though, and obviously Danny Hall is a very different case because he's been here for so long. He's got an honorary degree and absolute tech legend in so many different ways. But the thought process that went behind the Josh Pastor removal, I wonder how far down the line they've gotten to that with Danny at this point, because eventually you got to turn things. Like baseball is a very prominent Georgia Tech sport. You can't just float like this forever.
It's
And
just a
wins matter.
constant
When
sense of
you,
malaise, right?
yeah,
Like for
right.
the last 5 or 6 years, it's just been that they're putting the same product on the field, right?
Well, and
Outside of that 2019 season, yes, you can give them COVID. Like I think we kind of talked about the 20 season as being sort of that, like what could have been, but the last like 21, 22, 23, now 24, it's the same story. And
granted,
even before.
that whole team has turned over, but like they still got swept by UGA that year. Like I remember that. It wasn't fun. I don't know.
It's notable that when there's only a couple pieces that don't change and the rest of it's not changing the results any further in any substantial way that would signify real progress is coming to the team. I mean, as you say, randomness is definitely part of baseball, but you eventually average out to where you should be over a 20-year span. And the results in those last 20 years are telling. They absolutely are. I'm just thinking about right now, like, where would we be without Drew Burris right now, too? Like, this team wouldn't have anything to really identify with. Like, we are the Drew Burris team right now, and without him, it's the catcher youth thing's not exactly in an elite stage. Like, we don't have any elite, like, obvious first rounder right now. It's just Drew. I mean, obviously, a couple of good pitchers, still some relatively good hitting. Like, our averages in the lineup are not bad at all, but like what the it this is all this is all this entire season is resting on one guy right now. If he gets hurt, that's the season. He's
And the way that this team is set up, the entire team is subject to, and the way that this team has been producing, let me be clear, is subject to the variance of one guy who is extremely young and still has time left in this season for opposing pitchers to adjust to him. Now, that being said, halfway through the season, it doesn't seem like, it seems like they've started to a little bit, but it's college and college pitchers make mistakes at a much higher clip than pro pitchers do. And there's that we always have to consider that. But still, you've put all of your eggs into the we will outshoot you on a regular basis basket, and not into the we will do the right things on the mound, or like not even specked a little bit into the we will do the right things on the mound bucket, right? Like you have to be holistic, like to win championships, to win regionals, to be top of the sport, you have to be at least a modicum of well-rounded. If you're going to hit this well, go for it. That's fine, but you can't win. Like, it's just not feasible. Just the way that baseball works and the way that the ball bounces, it's not feasible to say, okay, I'm going to win every game 11 to 10, because 10 is still a lot, right? I don't know. I think we're kind of starting to talk in circles, and I think what we're saying is there needs to be an evaluation of this program, and at least seeing what needs to change, right? Like you tried the pitching coach, the hitting coach has been good. Hitting has been consistent. You've tried the pitching coach.
Recruiting's
What
been
else?
good.
Recruiting has been good. So what else can we change? What else can we evaluate? Where are we going wrong in our process? Is that talent evaluation? Is that talent translation? Is that player development? Which piece is not working the way that we expect, and then we sort of root cause from there, right?
That whatever that process looks like, I would imagine they're thinking about doing that or something like that. Like, there's always constant evaluation happening, but yeah, they figure out where what's broken. You got to find out what's broken so you can fix it. So,
Gotta debug the whole machine to figure out what's
have
wrong.
they tried turning it off and back on again?
Oh my gosh,
And on
Jack,
that
you're a funny
note,
guy. You know that?
let's take a quick break. Back in a tick.
As always, this podcast and this site brought to you by section103.com. Section 103 is the best place to find Georgia Tech apparel. Just a quick note from them, shipping is currently not happening. It will resume April 5th, so keep an eye out there. As always, Free shipping over $70 on items from Section 103. You can find them on Twitter at Section 103. And as always, drop a line from us and use code FTRS for 10% off. And we hope you support us as well as our fine associates over at Section 103.
Welcome back to Signs of the Southland for Monday, April 1st, 2024. Let's switch gears. Let's talk about the track and field team at Tech. They were in a split squad this weekend. Half of them were at Florida Relays, and half of them were in Raleigh for Raleigh Relays. Mr. Grant, what do you have for me from Florida?
Yeah, just a bit from Florida, a couple first places. The 4x800 relay, Kayla Rose, Gracie Marston, Allie Walker, and Lottie Chapel. Winning a relay is great, as I'm one to say. Winning a relay at the Florida Relays is also quite good to see as well. Billy Carlton also got first place in the men's 3K steeplechase, so great to see there. And Nick Nyman second in the 1500. 100 meters. So in general, a couple really nice finishes around the top half. I'm interested to see how that translates to the upcoming outdoor track and field rankings. I believe those release here soon. And it's really the first stake in the ground. We have to compare them across the board, because as we note, they were also in Raleigh. So you don't really get that full team effect until, I guess, ACCs.
Yeah, and just to talk about Raleigh a little bit, a couple good times here and there. Cole Miller and Tristan Autry did really well in the 3K steeple, both finished under 9.5 minutes. In the 10K, Devin Wade with a 29:39.92 time. In the women's 5K, Mary Brady and Helena Lindsay with a 16:09 and a 16:23, respectively. So a good competitive set of times coming from Raleigh. I think there was a little bit more action. I think both of these events, both in Florida and in Raleigh, were a little bit weather affected. So there might've been a little bit more today, but if there were, we'll make sure you are updated on that next week. The next event for track and field, they'll be back in Gainesville for the Tom Jones Memorial. That'll be on the 12th and 13th of April. Gentlemen, shall we move over to the tennis courts?
Yes. Sure.
That sounds affirmative to me. The number 32 Georgia Tech men's tennis team back in action, hosting a duet of games versus number 14 FSU and number 50 Miami. A 4-3 loss, a close decision to FSU, and then a 4-1 bounce back win versus Miami. Jack, what do you have for me on this FSU series?
Singles wise, matches weren't terribly close, so that was a deserved 4-2. Martin, Andres Martin, number 60 in the country right now. He was playing the number 4 player in the country, who's Cornut Shovnik, I want to say is how you say his name here. But he won 6-3, 6-3 of the number 4 player in the country. So that is telling for whenever he gets to singles tournament time down the line, which is really nice to see. And then Chris Arora was the only other guy that won for us. All the other singles matches were absolutely not close. Doubles won pretty handily as well in the two matches that we won. And then Miami, nice to just, beat a team. And also, FSU's 14 in the country, so, like, they're good. We're sitting 32, and then Miami's 50. So that was a match we should have won that we won.
Yeah, good. Lost the doubles point versus Miami, but a clean sweep in the singles department as well. So good to see that bounce back there. I'll add that I think, Jake, we've been talking about this team having a lot of near misses for their quality top line wins. And to me, that FSU close loss qualifies, right? It's another opportunity for a marquee win, and it was just right there. And FSU just what was better on the day.
Yeah, I think I think it's, again, it's an opportunity that'll come along. But at least the individual wins, I think, are certainly worth noting. That's something that may not translate in the wins and losses form now. But I mean, Andres has always kind of been the guy, right? And it's good to see him, good to see him playing in terms of taking top line talent to the brink there. One thing I do want to note is those games and sets do matter. I mean, if you can improve your ranking and get yourself a better draw come NCAA time, I mean, it's not
Sure,
something that
sure.
translates to wins and loss or team making the tournament or anything like that. And obviously he's number 16 in the country, so he's pretty darn good as is. But you know, if you can not face that number one guy, in what would that be, like the third or fourth round? Like that's more power to
Helpful.
you. Push that off as far away as it could be, and that'll be good. But you know, just a
Yeah,
thought.
absolutely. Before we talk about fixtures coming up, let's flip over to the women's side of Kim Byers. The number 20 overall Georgia Tech women's tennis team had a two-game set this weekend. The first versus Notre Dame, a 4-3 tight decision. Won the doubles point and split the singles versus Notre Dame, and then versus Louisville later in the weekend, a quick, clean, and easy 7-0 victory. Jack, you were on site for Louisville. Anything interesting stick out to you?
I checked Louisville's ranking and I couldn't find it, so that verified what I thought I saw on the court, was that they're just not that good compared to the rest of the ACC. Caroli and Sherebro just absolutely wiped the floor in their doubles match, and I think in like 20 minutes, like I literally think it just took 20 minutes for them to finish. It was quick and easy, and then we were up pretty quickly in all the singles matches, so it was clear to me that it was a very much overkill, and we won a lot of sets, 6-1, 6-2, 6-0, stuff like that as well. So, yeah, I think it was what you need to do against a team like that. Winning right now for the 20th team in the country, like that's big. You can't lose the easy ones like this. So I'm glad they won this well. Kira Lee and Kate Sherebro are tops ranked either singles slash doubles like unit we have out there right now. So seeing them wipe the floor like this was promising at this point in the season.
Yeah, just a quick note on Louisville. They are currently 4-14. They are the number
Oh.
125 team in the country, and they are currently, I believe, the 14th ranked team in the Massey ratings out of the Atlantic Coast Conference's 14 teams. So, your eyes do not deceive, Jack,
Okay.
in
Yeah,
that
yeah.
regard. They are Boston College is at 84, so they'd be the second lowest there.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, I mean right now are the top teams right now on campus are golf and women's tennis. Like these are, and Andre Spartan, if you want to use that as the best shot for the guys too.
He is him.
Just
A carve out.
you get add lump that in. So like this is I'm really curious how ACC tournaments falls and see where they're at against, because they're gonna play NCAA tournament worthy teams and possibly title contenders as well. So they getting hot. I mean, as we said with any other sport, any other tournament-based sport, got to get hot at the right time. These matches certainly do help that, just to see balls landing where you want to see them go. So, yeah, Lee and Sherebro are really, really good. They were hitting shots I was mighty, mighty impressed by, and nail and serves and all that good stuff. And it was windy also on that Sunday or that during that match as well. So they were dealing with all sorts of stuff.
It's good stuff. There are two ACC matches left on women's tennis slate. First one will be this Friday, April 5th versus Clemson at home. That'll be a 4 p.m. first serve. For the men, there are actually four games left, four matches left. The first weekend will be Friday at Louisville. That's number 38. Louisville on the men's side. That's a 3 p.m. first serve. And then Sunday will feature Tech going up to Notre Dame. That'll be a noon first serve. After that, one weekend left for the men before ACC's. Like I said, only one more match after Clemson left for the women. And both of them are in pretty good shape to make the tournament, would you say? I think we mentioned men ranked 32nd, doing pretty well there. Women ranked 20th. We should get both teams in a bunch of NCAA doubles and singles qualifiers. It should be a pretty packed house come NCAA tournament time once we get there. But for now, we will leave them to it. Let's recap real quick. The NCAAs for men's swim and dive. Anything stick out to you from this list of results, gentlemen? Jack, I know you were keeping an eye on this one because of an old teammate of yours.
Yeah, the tech part of this meet didn't exactly as we finished, as I mentioned last week, I was hoping they didn't slide as far down as they did last year, and but they seem to have done that. Outside of Murray Keel, who's getting 18th overall in the 1650 free, which was good. But no, I mentioned last week that Liam Bell, who I used to swim with in youth swimming, won the 100 breasts in 49.5 seconds, which was far and away the fastest ever in NCAA history, and blew me out of the water. Or I wasn't in the water, but just it blew my mind how fast this kid went. It was insane. And so yeah, I've seen I'm a terrible breaststroker, and I did not know a human could go as fast as he did on a 4:25 at 100 breasts. Absolutely incredible, incredible swim, which now it does impact how good our national team may become Olympics time in breaststroke. That's usually an event the US does not do that well in and hasn't won a gold medal in many, many years. So that's a huge, huge thing. So good prospects for the U.S. Olympic team. That said, Leon Marchand is going to swim for France. He basically won Arizona State the meet. He's going to win like five medals for France this summer too. So it was kind of as always, it's like a proto Olympics there. Like anyone that's still in the college age that's swimming college meets, they get some really good races in. So there was definitely a lot of that going on. So I outside of tech stuff, the 800 free relay at least placed, but everybody else that swim individual got eliminated in prelims for our guys. Odorici was the cl Leonardo Odorici was the closest of anybody to maybe make a final in the 100 breast as well. He got 20th, so he was just a couple spots off from getting a B final. And then Max Fowler got 19th in the 3 meter. So that our 400 free relay got DQ'd. So that sucks.
Womp,
Love that
womp.
for us.
Womp, womp. But the only other major thing that came out of the NCAAs that I saw, I guess this isn't tech related, is that Bob Bowman, who was Michael Phelps's old coach,
Yeah.
right after winning the NCAA title with Arizona State, took the job at Texas. So,
It was like known that that
Texas's
was,
swimming dynasty never dies.
it, yeah. It was known it was their coach's like last year and stuff like that over there, and
Yeah.
he's a legend of for Texas as well. So it's very much
Yeah.
a. I'm not saying it's a Nick Saban retired kind of thing because Bob Bowman is more like the Nick Saban of swimming in terms of legacy, but it is the. You take one of the best jobs and go get arguably one of the few better jobs that exists in the world, at least in that college world. So,
Very interesting stuff. Men swimming, the politics of the backroom dealings of men swimming never cease to amaze me at times.
wheelings
Any
and the
other
dealings.
wheelings, the dealings. Yeah, indeed. Any other news and notes from around the flats before we wrap up here?
I believe there was club lacrosse in action, wasn't there?
There was club lacrosse, seventh in the MCLA rankings, lost 16-13 to South Carolina at the weekend. A pretty close game. That's what I had in my notes here. As I was flicking through it on Twitter, South Carolina pulled away very late, though. Tech got aggressive. Tech had to keep pushing for goals if they wanted to stage a comeback, and South Carolina put up a couple garbage goals and pulled away late. So, a valiant effort. We'll see how this team does in its next fixture this weekend on Sunday versus Athens. That's a 2 p.m. start time. It's Founders Day, apparently, for Club Lacrosse. So go enjoy any of the festivities that they have available for you at the Sac Fields. Anything else from around the wide world of sports, gentlemen?
That's a big world. I don't know.
It is a big world.
I guess my last note on the Liam Bell thing, he's a DeKalb kid, so that was like an Atlanta, that's a big Atlanta win. That was a win for Atlanta, which is cool. And there's been like three or four DeKalb swimmers that have done really well, including Dean Ferris, who still has the 200 freestyle record from his time at Harvard. So he was like the last one of that batch that was from DeKalb that was at a nationally level very, very good. So our little swimming island had its moment. Hopefully it's not over.
I think Wide World of Sports, keep an eye out. Well, of course, tonight it'll be after this goes out, or before this goes out. There's Women's March Madness, men's and women's wrap up this coming weekend. We've got baseball. I don't know why you'd want to watch spring professional football, but that's out there. But I think all in last weekend, I caught glimpses of at least glimpses of seven different sports. To college hockey, Frozen Four is coming up too. I mean, this is sports overload week. We've
Yeah,
got
it is.
a lot of it
Oh,
through next Monday. So,
let's mention Christo Lampricht is playing the Masters.
yes,
That's a big thing coming up here. So, and he, as we remember, he was
2 weeks,
leading.
right?
Yeah, in 2 weekends, he was leading the British Open after round one last year. So, he's got major potential. I don't think he's played Augusta before. So, this will be very. He goes from, we have what there one tournament left, and then he goes and plays Augusta, and then the next weekend is ACC's. So he's got his very big tournaments ahead of him coming up.
I actually, before we get out of here, I want to bring this up. Do you know you can buy a Masters Party boost kit now?
Yes. Yeah. No, I almost did this last year.
I
I almost.
didn't. Wait, it's been a thing for more than 1 year? I thought this was new.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I tried to get my dad to buy it so we could eat the pimento cheese sandwiches at the brewery during while we watched the Masters.
They're sold out of the basic kit, by the way. So
Okay. He says.
you can't buy the basic. You can buy the large one, which is $180 plus free shipping. You still got to pay taxes, but free shipping in the kit. Let me read what it's got. 24-ounce tin of egg salad, 24-ounce tin of pimento cheese, 24-ounce tin of pork barbecue, 6 packets of plain potato chips, 6 packets of barbecue potato chips, 6 cookies, 6 packets of Georgia pecan caramel popcorn, a sleeve of 25 Masters branded souvenir cups, a sleeve of 12 sheets of Masters branded wax paper, a pack of 12 Masters coasters, and hosting kit materials. Note, bread and buns for your sandwiches are not included.
This has massive COVID takeout energy in a way that I don't think I've seen in like 2 years. But it's like, wow, just
Longer than
slap it
that,
all in a
but
box and send
yeah.
it out. But
So
like
Jake,
May
we're doing this, right?
2020, don't let your local businesses die. This is that energy right there.
So
So
Jake, I should place one of these and send it over to your house, right?
I'm a seafood guy. I see food, I eat it. Like, let's go.
We should wrap up. I want to go watch Caitlin Clark.
Gotta go eat dinner
Okay,
too,
Jake.
boys.
Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. Thank you for discussing the Masters hosting kit with me today as well. Jake, where can the people find us?
Yes, as always, you can find us at fromtherumbleseat.com. You can email us at fromtherumbleseat@gmail.com. We're always looking for ideas, so feel free to send them our way. Even if it's, a guest that might interest you, let us know what your thoughts are there, and we'll try our best to make it happen. In terms of Twitter, you can find us at FTRS blog. I'm at JakeGrant98. Jack's at Jack Nicholas. You can find us at FTRS blog, and you can find Section 103 at Section 103 or Section103.com. Remember, code FTRS for 10% off. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at From the Rumble Seat. And you can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. Please rate, review, tell your friends. We really do appreciate it. Until you hear us next time. Good night, good luck, and go Jets.